had to wait on the guy with the Hey Dudes on. Good morning, everybody. This is just a review week. So, I hope if y'all had something that was brought up that y'all were chewing on and have questions, we can work through it together. I'm going to start off reading a passage, Hebrews 11, verse 23. If you think back in this unit, we started off very early. And this whole story has really been about Moses. This whole unit started off with baby Moses being floated in the water, and where we ended with instructions for the tabernacle. So this Hebrews verse is something I read early on, and once we got towards the end of our study, I stopped reading it. But I want to start off with that today. Good morning. How are y'all? There's the life of the party. We'll just keep going. All right. Hebrews 11, verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that the child was beautiful, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. By faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured, as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood, so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. By faith, the people crossed the Red Sea as on dry land, but the Egyptians, when they attempted to do the same, were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after they had been encircled for 7 days, and it's going to continue. But that takes up about the first six of our lessons, all listed out in Hebrews, and it's by faith. By faith, by faith, by faith. Things that you wouldn't necessarily attribute to faith. It's talking about faith. One thing that's probably the most, when I read it, you would think, oh, he fled in fear of his life. Was when it says, by faith, Moses fled Egypt, not by fear of the king. It's this whole story, when we read about Moses, I mean, he's listed in the Faith Hall of Fame over here. And each of his actions that we're reading about early on in these chapters are all by faith, by faith, by faith. I have kicked around how to do this review, 'cause I know a lot of folks were intermittent. I'm gonna just briefly headline these chapters or units or whatever you want to call them, and then if y'all have questions or remember something that y'all were curious about, it's a great time to bring it up. I know we went through this whole Moses section incredibly fast and through a lot of dense stuff fast, so I'm going to try to keep my talking to more of a minimum. And then hopefully y'all have some questions, comments, or something that you've been mulling over since we've started. So God Protects Moses was all about Moses' early years. we talked about the ark and the parallels between baby Moses floating in the basket, which is the same word used as Noah in the ark. And we see that path through the Bible of God protecting his people. We have God calls Moses, and we have Moses's request not to be used by God 5 times, right? God calls Moses, and Moses is trying to think of any excuse in the book not to have to be put in this place where he's speaking for God on that behalf. When we look, even in the New Testament, when we're talking about it, there's a higher standard to be held for teachers and people who profess God, right? There's a higher standard for those of us who say we're cloaked. And so I can only imagine in this moment, Moses is kind of like, "Bull, this is the big guy wanting to use me. What if I screw it up?" Right? We make a lot of lame excuses in some instances to try not to be used by God. And oftentimes we don't ever come to a place of honesty where there's just fear and worry and that much responsibility in presenting God, how God is calling you to. Anything on that one? Any reflections, comments? God displays his power. So we're going to, that's the first. The next one is about the last plague. But we start looking. Oh man, I forgot. It's the fourth plague's the last one that wasn't divided. And we talked about, I said fifth last time, but it is the fourth. We talked about how God is trying to get a hold of his people, right? And so there wasn't this division between plagues. At first, it was hitting everybody. And then you can imagine the moment where the people, have you ever done something, and probably in a lot of y'all's lives, you do something so much, and then let's say you retire, or you have a job, or a different change, and you go through that change, and then one day you're called back to do what you used to do, and you're kind of fumbling with it, and you're like, "Oh man, I did that with reloading. I used to love reloading in high school, got super big into it, and then life happened, and I hadn't reloaded in like 5 years. And then I go back to it, and I'm thinking, "Oh man, I thought this was like riding a bike." You can almost see this. The people are getting called back, and they're kind of stumbling, and because they were turned their backs on them in a lot of ways, where they were just came to a place of content and some laziness, and they were just okay being slaves. And then after they get pushed to a certain point, then they ask God to be back in their lives, and God hears their cry. And then they don't really, they just kind of want the pain to stop, the extra labor to stop. But it's like when Kevin talks about when you just want enough of God not to change you, just to be saved. And you can see this in this instance where they're going through slavery and the conditions harshen. And they're calling out for God. And then you see God come into the picture. And what do? Nah. Like, this wasn't... You could have just sent us back to our normal workload, and we would have been completely content, right? And so you see this struggle with that. And also to understand that Moses is trying to be the mouthpiece of God in this situation, with a people that doesn't want to, much like he didn't want to originally. But you see these plagues, and you see the people remember who God is, and then God starts to plague solely the Egyptians in ways that directly hit upon their gods, directly contradict their gods. And for the first few, you see Pharaoh's magicians are able to duplicate blood and signs, and then it gets ramped up to a place where he comes face to face with God, right? And we see this face to face moment, and we've talked about it quite a bit, is when you come face to face with God, you have two options: to do what the old Pharaoh did, and to bless this people because he understands who God is and understands he is the God. Or you push back and deny him, what this Pharaoh is doing. And so, anything on that? I know we're going through pretty fast, but we're almost out of time, and I would like to leave some space on a couple of these. God sends the final plague, and we talked about that. That's the death of the firstborn. And that's not a pleasant story to read, right? You just see the wrath and the... and we talked a little bit about the firstborn, and I preached a little bit after it, but you have these verses throughout the New Testament that's talking about Christ as the firstborn, and we like to make that comparison. When God's talking here, telling them what to say to Moses, it talks about, "You've struck my firstborn people," talking about the Israelites as God's firstborn. And we see not the retaliation, but this, don't even want to call it rebuttal, but you have Pharaoh's heart that's hardened, and there needs to be something drastic enough for God's people to do what God has planned for his people. I left a lot of it out. I'm going to leave a lot of it out today too. There's theories and things get kicked around a lot about, well, the Egyptians could have partaken in Passover. The Egyptians could have came into the house of a Jewish person and been saved. And there's a lot of dull down when we get to these. There's a lot of uncomfort when we get to these stories, which is understandable. But our reaction oftentimes isn't to take what the Bible's giving you. It's to try and twist it in a way that's easier for us to swallow. And at the end of the day, God has two sides. He wouldn't be God without both sides, and there's justice and there's mercy. But when we look back now, everybody's got to be covered by the blood of Christ. And to think that anything's going to be different in our salvation is to try to twist and contort what's really happening. And so it's interesting to see us have similar struggles with issues of the day as we do with this passage, where we try to dull down and make more comfortable for us what God's trying to tell us to do. And that brings us into the golden calf story here in a minute, where you see God's people try to make things more comfortable for themselves. The next one, unless there's any questions, comments, is God parts the Red Sea for the people. And you have a people who watches the Egyptians closing in on them, and their reaction was to go to not God, but to Moses and say, "Did you bring us out of Egypt because there weren't enough graves?" And you get this moment where you see who the people are vested in. And we get to that. That's through this whole story. These people are vested heavily in not necessarily God, but Moses. They're tied off to a guy that has been a huge part of God carrying out his plan. But at the end of the day, he's still not God. And we see that oftentimes in our own lives where we tie off to people who have just been rock stars in our lives, who have helped us along the way, and you see them do great things. I was talking to one of the guys at work earlier, and he was part of some cheating adultery scandal, and it was one of his people he loves to listen to. He's a preacher, loves to listen to him. And it just reminds you who you tied off to. Throughout the whole Bible, we see David, a man after God's own heart, Bathsheba, their offspring carries on the throne, and Solomon. And we see this repetitiveness is that when we put all of our stock into something that's not God, that may be working for God but is not God, they fall short every time. That's one of in today's modern age, when I think about the poor people who have run for public office, whether it's president, everything's going to come out, right? And if you think you like somebody and they run for that, you're going to hear a lot of stuff that you don't like about them, right? Everybody's got a past. If you could live without a past, then there would be no reason for Christ. And so you just see God's people vested in Moses, who has a just the smallest waiver, and guess what? Doesn't go to the promised land, right? One of the guy who comes off glowing from the mountain, reflecting God in a way that hadn't been seen before, is the guy that also doesn't get the promised land. Right? He's still part of the promise, and that's not to say, and that's the important part, right? We get caught up in what can God do for us here in this little blip of life. And when we focus on that, oftentimes we miss the whole story. We miss the actual promised land, the promise of eternity with God. And there's no better example of that than Moses, of getting stuff right over and over and over, and not getting it here. Gonna flip to the next one. God provides in the wilderness. The cycles of the Bible happen very fast throughout Moses' story. God does this incredible act and splits the waters and takes his people away from the Egyptians and crushes the whole Egyptian army. And what do they do right away? They start whining, right? And then they come back to who? Not God, but Moses, and says, hey, we need water. Hey, we need food. We need all this stuff. And God has Moses in two different instances provide water through striking a rock. And they're complaining about the water that they had, and he throws a log in there and it makes it sweet. But, oh man, the Exodus story is just so indicative of our day to day. How many times have we gone through life and we recognize something in our own lives that you're like, oh, there's no way that happened except for God. And then the next day you're like, I do it all the time, right? There's just instances where you can attribute wholeheartedly to that's a God thing. If you're paying attention, you're probably running into those frequently. And you're probably thankful in the moment. And then the next day, somebody comes and gives you bad news. It's and you just let it all go backwards. I mean, this is... Right. So, I mean, we see, I mean, prevalently throughout all these, and I imagine this is going to go fairly straight through the Bible. I haven't looked at the next unit to see what we're talking about. I imagine it's probably wrapping up Moses and going on from there. But it's going to just keep continuing. It still does, right? In our own lives, in our own ways, we just repeat the cycle. One thing that I'm going to bring up about our first lesson, I guess we're now on Unit 6, but when we're talking about creation, Kevin showed it to me. I was in these guys' class. But he wrote something on the board, and it was creation, chaos. There's one more C before Christ. Oh, man, I put him on the spot. I should have written it down. Creation, chaos, corruption. Oh, okay, that makes sense. Creation, corruption, chaos, and then there's this one offset, and it's Christ. The world's going to provide you two things. God's already created. What's going to happen over and over is corruption and chaos. There's only one way out of it, and it's Christ. And that doesn't mean you're going to get out of it while you're living here on this earth, but that does mean one day you'll get out of it. And the Bible is indicative of that story that happens starting in Genesis chapter 3. Corruption, chaos, corruption, chaos, corruption, chaos. And every once in a while you get this, oh man, I gave him a bloody nose. Every once in a while, you get this glimpse of Christ and glimpse of good, and things set back. And then what do you have? Corruption, chaos, just over and over. And there's no doubt in my mind that that's going to continue throughout the rest of our lives. But the important thing is that we're tied into the offset, and that's Christ. No comments or questions yet, huh? I must be doing really good, babe. All right. Next one's Ten Commandments. We talked a lot about the commandments and how God could have just left it at 10, right? You got this Ten Commandments, and there's not one of us in here that's abided by those 10. And I believe there were 637 Old Testament commandments. And when we think about that, it kind of makes you wonder why. And the commandments that we read about and that we look about, they're relational. It's God trying to show people to the T, because what happens when people get a little bit of leeway? They take it, right? I'm the same way. If I get a role that I'm like, there's some gray area in that, right? Nah, you can take it, right? It's kind of like, and that's what I'm worried that my oldest son's going to do to me in the future. But we see humans' tendency to give an inch, take a mile, give an inch, take a mile. And so God could have left it at these 10, but then you see him go and break down all these things that would strike us as incredibly odd. And I'm sure we'll probably get into Leviticus, but I'll when I drive, I listen to the Bible. That was my goal, because according to my calculations, I could listen to the whole thing in about a month and a half of driving to work and back. And I got to Leviticus, and I kept rewinding. I'm like, why on earth? That doesn't even make any sense. And then you start looking at the heart of these laws, and just the weirdness. If a bull spears another livestock or a person, and the person doesn't put him down and he does it again, then you stone the owner. And I thought, wow, that is really messed up. And then you think about it. What's God's concern? It's about the people. If there's something affecting the life of the people, a violent animal even, that is bad for God's community and for his people, it's your responsibility to own up to that and to take care of it. Because what's people's thing? Oh, I've got this bull. If I lose this bull, right? Is it ever fun losing a cow? No. Their livelihood's in that. Their survival is in that. And they don't have big freezers, right? They don't have all this stuff that can make that last a while. It's gone. And that's people's tendencies, to hang on to what they got. And God's saying, if it's not good for the people around you, the people that you should love and care about, cut it out. And you see this over and over throughout God's laws, is relationship has been the primary subject from day one. Relationship with God and relationship with people that you're around. And that all those commandments could be tied up in the greatest commands that Jesus talks about, right? Love God and love your neighbors. That's, you read through this whole thing and you're thinking, when you put two and two together, it's okay, that sounds really weird offhand, but that'd be taking care of my neighbor. That'd be taking care of business. So if a neighbor's kid runs in and wants to play with an animal, I can see Brooks doing that. He loves animals. My dog is awfully large and does not know it, and he knocks Brooks flat on his back every once in a while when we're playing fetch. And Brooks is not a fan of that. But you just see, it's all about relationship with God and your neighbors. And that's going to be, it sums up so nicely, and people can try to split that up. But if you really look through all the laws, this, oh, really? You're killing me. Is that 5 minutes or 10 minutes? Five more? Wow, okay. All right, we're moving on. Relationship's important. Next. God punishes idolatry, and that's where we get into the golden calf story. That has become one of my favorite stories once I've looked more and more into it. It's something that we just do. It's not that the people don't believe in God. They have this moment of fear because the guy who's led them out of everything is up on the mountain, and there's thunder and fire and lightning, and they're fearful. And they come to Aaron and say, hey, we don't know what happened to Moses. And what's Aaron's command? Bring all the rings from your wife's ears and your son's hands and all these things. Bring all this gold together and let's melt it down. And what do? They make an image of a golden calf. And what do they call it? Yahweh. The greatest name, the I Am, they've doled down to a cow. And they want something, and we understand that. You want something, you desire something to worship, something physical, something that you can see. And so they do it. And by doing that, They take this great name of God and put it into an animal that we're supposed to have dominion over. They take God's commands and it's to worship Him and it's to do all these things. And they kind of do it. They have the feasts and festivals that Moses talks about. But they twist it to make it a touch more comfortable and easier to understand and grab a hold of for them. Oh, that's a scary thought. I talked about it. I guess this was 2 weeks ago. But if you read a Jewish scholar, whether it's messianic or not, you read Jewish scholars, and over and over, this is attributed the greatest sin of the Jewish people. Like I said earlier, the one Jewish scholar wrote that at least 1/8 of all punishment handed down from God today is due to the golden calf. That's how serious that these people are taking this. And we look at our own lives, and how often do we do it? It's uncomfortable, but think about the sins that Satan has gotten our community, the world, to justify. Not only to justify, but to put up on a pedestal like these people are something else, right? And so many sins are put up that way. Go ahead.
So, again, not to contradict you, but historically, the golden calf was highly revered in Persian culture, pre-Muslim religion. And so this ideology wasn't new to this area, right? So I look at it as like this was comfortable versus the unknown, right, of Moses, where do you go? Like, we're going to fall back.
Right, and we talked a little bit about that on, 3 weeks ago now, is that they're taking the worldly culture, because they're living in Egypt, and just think about how many gods, per se. When we talked about the plagues, they listed 9 gods that God sent plagues specifically to refute their gods. So it was just 9 that we can fall back on like that. And they all have heads of animals, typically, or are animals. And it's something that they've been around for hundreds of years. Oh, man. And so they're taking this worldly culture that is used to and comfortable, and they're like, I know that's wrong, but what happens if we do that and we just stick God's name on it? What happens if we make this cow and we just stick God's name on it? Because that's what we watch people do for hundreds of years. And we still want to worship Yahweh because He's done all this stuff and we understand that He's the God. He just took us out of a place and wiped out the whole Egyptian army. He just did all these miracles and we understand He's the God. But I kind of liked that they did this. And so what happens if we just kind of merge the two? What happens if we just kind of put the two and two together and come up with this where it's easier for us and we can still worship God. And how often do we do that now? And again, like he said, this is the culture that they're in. Think about the culture that we're in and how easy it is and how much of this garbage is put up and looked upon fondly by the world. And it's our job to say it's garbage. Whether that's easy or not, it's never supposed to have been easy. But oftentimes, and Kevin's talked about it in sermons, is we get this instance where, are we changing the culture? Is the culture changing the church? There's a lot of churches very comfortable with sin that promote their ideology and think, oh, we're still right with God. Because they took this lie that Satan's woven in our culture, and it's become okay, and several things have become okay. There's nothing specific. We can take it however far down the road we want. Oregon legalized all drugs. Right? Crazy. Homosexuality? You know how many homosexual churches there are? How many books are written that it's okay? And you take all these things and you can think of any sin, there's a Christian church that has explained them away. I do Christian in quotations because it's a worldly gathering. But we do it today. And like I said, in that instance where if you're looking at God's people, and I was in that moment, and for hundreds of years I've been living with Egyptians that worship gods for everything. It's going to be pretty easy for me to do that. I mean, let's be honest, if we do it nowadays, probably would have been really easy back then. And so, I know we're way out of time, but if there was one lesson out of this whole book that I hope y'all listen to, it's that one. Because that is a very prevalent in today's world, and it is incredibly important to grab a hold of that concept. I love the saying, God doesn't play hide the peanut. He doesn't. I mean, he writes a lot of things very black and white. And we can try and pick the fly crap out of the pepper, but at the end of the day, the root of what people struggle with back then is the root that we struggle with today. We've read through all these stories and how prevalent in our lives are all of them. That's pretty incredible. So it's not a book that just people use that. Oh, that was 2,000 years ago. How many times have you heard that? Right? Things have changed today. People are still the same. We just have technology, and all of a sudden we think we're a lot smarter than we really are. And that's what it comes down to. You can have Google and think you're about the brightest guy on the planet because you can pull up cool factoids in about 30 seconds. But all that is information. And if it's not pointing to God, it's wrong. So, I'm going to be done. Thank y'all. I don't know if I'll be here next week or not. Monty's shaking his head yes, but we'll see. Thank y'all for spending 10 weeks with me.